Smith Show. Check out the website, LyricSmithShow.com. So you remember back in October, you know, after the whole Kavanaugh thing, you know, they rammed him through, like thieves in the night, like you knew they were going to do, that, you know, Chief Justice John Roberts sent ethics complaints against, you know, Kavanaugh to the 10th Circuit Justice there for review. And I remember at the time saying, you know, what's that going to bring? What can we do? What could possibly come of it? And I concluded at the time, probably nothing. Maybe I could be wrong, which is why I've asked Bob Wiener to come talk with us. Bob was a Clinton and Bush White House spokesperson, also a spokesman for the House Judiciary and Government Operations Committees during his time. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
It's a pleasure, Rick, and I always love doing your show because you get the things that other people don't.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Because I'm looking at this, and look, I was happy that Roberts moved that along. I was happy that, you know, there was something. I concluded at the time it would go nowhere. You've come out with an op-ed saying, you know, wait a second, maybe there's something that can happen. Walk me through it.
And Op-Ed News ranked it H1, the number one op-ed in the country when we put it out a week ago. The point is that there is precedent. Kavanaugh isn't necessarily lifetime. Abe Fortas, if anybody remembered, I remember that, Rick, that's what you get for being old. In 1969, under pressure of ongoing investigations, financial, he had to resign. The Chief Justice told him, you're an embarrassment to the court. So what Nadler is going to do, and I've been in touch with the Judiciary Committee, is they're thinking very strongly about doing an investigation of the process where the FBI was corralled by Don McGahn, the White House chief lawyer, who is also in charge of shepherding Kavanaugh through. So what a conflict of interest. And what he did was, under their instructions, the FBI never got to Kavanaugh's roommates, the places where Dr. Christine Blasey Ford could have identified where things happened, the other women that there were witnesses for. They never investigated any of that. They just let it go through. And then Susan Collins had her little excuse to just stay her ground instead of having that overwhelming evidence to get the guy with. So that's what they're going to do, I believe, is the process. And now that they have the precedent of Abe Fortas, a justice who did not have the right to a lifetime appointment when the investigation went through. And you're right, Rick, that Roberts sent it to Colorado because Roberts thought it would be a conflict to do it in the D.C. circuit. So he sent it to where it would be a neutral court. So that's hanging, and the judiciary investigation is hanging. And what a difference that will make, because the way that the Republicans, and as you all know, as everybody knows, it was a one-vote difference, and Flake and Collins sort of violated what everybody thought they would finally do when they became Republican pawns. So this may turn out differently ultimately, too. And it's just part of the bad news day for Trump. You heard, Rick, that the Democrats now have flipped the seat in California that NBC had already called Republican. NBC retracted it, and now it's a 40. It looks like a 40-seat gain. And Manafort is being prosecuted now for lying and witness tampering, and he's going to be having more time added to a sentence unless Trump gives him a pardon. That's possibly out there, which would be a political disaster.
Yeah, no. When I first saw the story of Manafort evidently violating the plea agreement.
Right.
The first thing I thought of is someone got to him and said, don't walk near any open windows.
Well, there's two options. One, Trump dangled a pardon, and number two, the Russians are threatening him with polonium.
Is it possible? I mean, is it possible that Trump could pardon him? I mean, given the situation that he's in, or would that cause a backlash, do you think?
Well, it's not going to take much to persuade the House to go in 6 months after seeking the truth on all these investigations and find out his emoluments, which is the word for profits that the Congress says you're not allowed to make as president. And then the Russia stuff, especially if this illegitimate guy Whitaker, who's never Senate confirmed, tries to block the investigation. It's not going to take much to go toward, and Trump put him in as an obstruction of justice, let alone the Trump Tower meeting and the Oval Office meeting and all of that. But it's not going to take much to persuade the House to go toward impeachment, and that would be it. Then the question is there even a snowball's chance in our lovely universe that we could go to a Senate conviction? And it doesn't look like it right now.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the Kavanaugh thing. I want to stick with that for a second before we move on to the other stuff.
Yep.
Because, you know, how do you see this playing out then? I mean, if the 10th Circuit, you know, finds that there was something there that, you know, he did lie under oath during, you know, some of the testimony, that the FBI didn't do their due diligence and in looking at this. You know, how does this proceed then? I mean, we're in I think kind of uncharted waters. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I can see it playing out, having been the spokesman for the House Judiciary Committee. I mean, what a joy, Rick, by the way. My guys. I mean, Cummings and Richie Neal. I was in the Young Democrats with Steny and Clyburn. I was in the Young Democrats with them. And now they're all really in charge to be able to do something. The way that – and Conyers was the chair of Judiciary before Nadler. And I've talked to Nadler, and, he's warm and fuzzy because he knows what I did. So the way I see it playing out is they will have the investigation when they do oversight of the FBI. They'll bring him in, and then there'll be shock and outrage when the FBI guy has to say that the White House instructed them to go no further. And then there'll be demands to have a full investigation of the process, and then they'll go into a full day or two or three or four of that. And in that process, the negatives of Kavanaugh will come out as part of the oversight of the FBI's not doing their due diligence. That's how I think it'll play out.
Yeah, I mean, because I look at that day of testimony, that whole charade, the whole dog and pony show that they put out, without actually bringing in any of the people that this woman, the judge should have been brought in at the minimum, and deposed.
They didn't talk to his Yale College roommate.
Yeah, I mean, you go down the list of all the people that weren't. I have friends who have gone through attempting to get security clearance, and they've told me it's an inspection like you can't imagine.
Right. I did it. You're exactly right. They do it. It's a 30-page form, first of all. Second of all, they talk to everybody. My neighbors tell me, hey, so-and-so was here. We said you were a nice guy. It's amazing what they do for security clearance. That's exactly correct.
So
they didn't do it here. They were told not to. They had to follow the guidelines of the guy who's sitting behind Kavanaugh in the hearing, whose job is to shepherd him through. That's who was giving the directions to the FBI on what to and not to investigate.
Now, and there's something wrong with that. But, again, you go back
you
to... Well, of course, but, you go back to all of the other times that he's gone through this process, and you've got to start asking questions on, how did he even get through the first one after his time during the Bush administration?
And he lied, and that stuff came out. And the Democrats made a little thing of it, but it wasn't the kind of in-depth of scrutiny that you get when it's for the Supreme Court, and I can appreciate that.
Now, is there a chance of ousting him, do you think?
That's the reason I wrote the op-ed, is that there is a precedent for doing that. Don't start saying that it's a lifetime appointment and you're there forever when Abe Fortas was thrown out in 1969 for ethics violations.
Yeah, but, Fortas was taking a boatload of money from somebody that, it wasn't just a one-time pay-for-play thing. It was a good sum for a number of years.
Well, just like the Me Too movement worked in this election, and it was payback somewhat for the Access Hollywood tape that people were disgusted with. There was disgust at the way that Kavanaugh acted in that hearing. It was so un-Supreme Court justice-like. It was so partisan, talking about the Clinton enemies and all of that. It was an outrage. And people will remember that, and so there may be a way to do it, Rick, that people want to do because of that performance.
Now, I don't know if anyone's going to remember the Kavanaugh testimony or the Matt Damon Saturday Night Live bit.
Yeah, really. Right.
Because while the Damon bit was parody, it was almost exactly what Kavanaugh did. I mean, it's like the one time, I forget who, on Saturday Night Live, they just read Sarah Palin's words.
That's right.
And,
geez, and you really couldn't tell the Sarah Palin versus what's her name who played her? That was amazing.
Tina Fey, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, just the difference was minuscule.
Yeah, I mean, but you just read their actual words. So, I mean, there's a thin line between reality and satire. So I'm hoping this op-ed will put a thought in someone's mind, and I'm hoping they move forward on it. So let's move along, because, the hope is that the Democrats do some oversight. And I think where it has to start is with voter suppression and voter theft.
I mean, I love what Pelosi did with Marcia Fudge. I'm thinking of challenging you. Come on in and let's meet. And she walks out of the meeting. Geez, Pelosi is such a master, saying, there's a lot to being Speaker. You got to travel all the time and raise money all the time. And she offered me a subcommittee on voter suppression, which is a really important thing, and I'm glad that Pelosi did that. And so I'm going to endorse her. That was the end of the opposition. It was a riot.
Yeah,
so
well,
masterfully played by Pelosi. It shows why she is the only one who can match Trump. So what everybody's going to do is, you know, there'll be enough that only vote present that give her the speakership. Because they don't count. Only if you vote against her for somebody else.
Yeah, but it kind of reminds me, that whole thing kind of reminds me of the old Art Buchwald quote. Where if you beat them up enough, they make you part of the establishment.
She's not part of the establishment. She's a flaming liberal.
I'm a flaming liberal.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. And me too. I didn't say that negatively. Maybe it sounded like it. So let's correct ourselves here if that's the way I came across. So and because, you know, you go to the fact that just today, 18 and 10% say, I don't care and I care I don't care a lot. And then 60% say they want more action on climate change. The country is progressive. The country is liberal.
I hope you're right, but, you know, it doesn't show that.
That just came out tonight on NBC.
In a lot of the places that we see. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is where I'm hoping Nancy Pelosi, because I think she's going to be Speaker. I think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, name me anybody who's running against her.
Seth Moulton.
Against her? He's running for president.
And he's actually more conservative than she is, and I'm not thrilled with that either.
That's what Alexia Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez said, is that those 16 people who signed that letter, they're blue dogs. They're not philosophically an improvement for change, so why would we go that route? That's what she said, and she's sort of like the epitome of the new progressive takeover Congress.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get more people like her. I mean, because at the end of the day, did you see this attack last week on her? I think it was on CNBC. They did a piece on her and her net worth, that she's got like, you know, 10 grand in a checking account, like $1,000 in a savings account. You know, like 5 or 6 grand in a 401k or something.
So?
She's basically broke.
That's the point. I thought you were saying that's a lot of money. Yeah, right.
No, I mean, she's basically broke. And
she's
they were mocking her.
She's the youngest congressperson ever elected, ever.
Right.
29.
Right.
What do you expect her to have as net worth now?
But they were mocking her as, you know, part of the generation that, you know, doesn't save and doesn't. And I'm going, these people don't have jobs. What the hell are you talking about? And it's the policymakers that have created this environment to where the next generation doesn't have this chance. When I was her age, you know, I was fortunate. I had a good paying union job where I had a defined benefit pension and the ability to put money away. Most kids today, they don't have that. Those union jobs are long gone.
Two-thirds of those pension benefits are gone. Companies don't do them anymore. That's another thing we're working on. But with Ocasio-Cortez, it is a wonderful thing to see her wonder and her awe at the process as she goes through. And she's taking the pictures, and she's putting them out to everybody as she takes them. And she says, they have secret tunnels through the Congress. I mean, the wonder and the awe of her discovering the governing process, we need more of that awe and love of what you're doing.
Yeah, I like her. I hope she will continue the passion and not get mired in some of some scandal and not – not become part of the establishment.
I think she's got her head screwed on straight. I think she's going to do okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that. But back to Pelosi, you know, with the leadership of where the Dems in the House are going to go, because I don't know that you can spend the next 2 years just attacking Trump. But I think the voter suppression thing has to be the first thing they go after.
Infrastructure and health care expansions, protecting Social Security. They had an agenda. You know, everybody likes to say they didn't have an agenda. They had an agenda. Healthcare was like 41 to 26, the number one issue, and everybody saw through the Republican lies of after they voted about 80 times to take away pre-existing conditions and to kill the Affordable Care Act, suddenly they became lovers of it. No, you don't get that, and they didn't get it. And so the number now, the latest number is 8.8. The Democrats won by 9%. And that's about the most ever in a congressional off-year election. It's a historic win. The problem was we only get 40 seats out of it, whereas the Tea Party got 60 because of gerrymandering and reapportionment. We got to fix that. That's the key thing that kills us.
And this comes back to that whole voter suppression and voter theft.
Absolutely.
I mean, I look at Georgia. If that's not a case for mass investigations, I don't know what is.
and literally where they made the voters get out of Dodge, and they made the voters in Dodge City go miles out of Dodge City, even though the president of the student council launched the lawsuit. And then the judge says, oh, it's too close to the election. It would disrupt people now. What kind of ruling was that? So these judges that the Trump people are putting in, they're a disaster. We got to get we got to fix the judiciary, too. That's another thing.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you got, and this is where I've said for a long time, you got to give conservatives credit. They had a long game, and they stuck to it. They built the infrastructure to con we the people into buying their BS, like tax cuts create jobs. You know, we bought it for a number of years, and I'm hoping that, you know, this latest ripoff, we're finally, you know, coming around to. Because, you know, remember that whole that's creating jobs? GM took a boatload of money, and, well, 14,700 people are going to lose their jobs
soon. That's right. Well, and you're exactly right on the rich tax cuts don't create jobs. Library of Congress did a study on that, and then McConnell tried to force the study to be repressed. And the guy, the head of the division, I did an op-ed on this. It was, I think, in the Miami Herald or somewhere like that. And he put it out anyway, showing that the way to create jobs is government jobs as the catalyst, not tax breaks, which give you one-fifth at most of the bang for the buck of actually jobs programs. So what I'm hoping for is, you know, we do infrastructure, Rick, in this coming Congress, but that it doesn't turn into, oh, we'll make 40% of it tax breaks for the rich as the price for doing, and then we lose half of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Do
you see that
forcing us to do?
Do you see that going forward? Do you see the possibility of an infrastructure? Because, look, I thought it was the first thing Trump should have done.
Yep.
Had he done that, I think he'd be viewed as a much different president. Had he taken a more bipartisan approach and said, hey, let's get those things done that we can get done, like infrastructure and get money into communities and rebuild, I think he would be viewed completely differently than he is right now.
That was my question. I was at the first White House briefing with Spicer, and I asked, because I wanted to push the issue along, are you going to stand on your positions on infrastructure and protecting Social Security? And he said, absolutely, yes. And then they did nothing, nothing, nothing. So we put a piece, you may remember it, in the Philadelphia Inquirer saying, Mr. President, where's your infrastructure plan? You know, after a year of doing nothing. And then a week, right, because of that, because he was so proud of having taken Pennsylvania, he went out and did one of his three infrastructure weeks, and still nothing, nothing. And so I talked to Clyburn about it, who's now going to be back to number three Democrat again, and he said the Republicans simply don't want to pay for it. So I'm hopeful that we get something, but, you know, they're going to try to exact the price of tax cuts is infrastructure. And so watch that bill. It's going to be, first, it's going to have some infrastructure, some jobs, some tunnels, because even Trump has said the Lincoln Tunnel is falling apart. And, you know, and we had a thing at the National Press Club that I sponsored, and I had the city planners come in, and the guy confirmed that. And then, so we'll have some of that, but then it's going to be, you know, like they did on the economic bailout in the crisis. They made 40% of it, people forget, tax breaks as the price for the Democrats to go along with it, tax breaks for the rich. So I'm guessing that they have a pattern in practice, as they say in law, and that's probably what they'll do here, and we may have to just bite the bullet and accept that. What do you think?
Well, to be honest, at this point, you know, I have two thoughts. One, I'm not in favor of any more tax cuts. We've whipped that horse to death. We should be using that money to rebuild our infrastructure. And sorry, Wall Street's not bailing us out unless we put up cash boxes everywhere. I don't think the Democrats move on an infrastructure bill and give the Trump administration a win unless it's something that's a win for working people. And massive tax breaks as the pound of flesh to get the pothole out in front of my house fixed. Sorry, not going along with it.
Well, I don't disagree. I mean, I am concerned. You go to Europe and the trains whip at 300 miles an hour, and the airports are actually good, and the roads actually are phenomenal. And what are we doing here when we're supposed to be the leader in all that? It's outrageous.
Yeah, we're living off
Eisenhower, the Republican, created the interstate highway system.
Yeah, we're living off the 1950s investment.
Correct.
It is what it is. But, Bob, I appreciate the thoughts. Before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Mississippi race. How you see that going?
I wish I could be optimistic. You don't have a child pervert in the race, so minus that, I think the racist wins.
Yeah, well, we're on the same level. There you go.
Yeah, right.
Bob, great talk with you. I appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be with you.
Bye. Always good to talk to our good friend Bob Wiener. Make sure you check out his website, wienerassociates.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith.